Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of November, 2019. Welcome to episode 54 of this podcast series. The concept of the show is to just have a brief chat about what comic books I've read since the last time we had one of these brief chats, which should make this pretty much the books I read during November. These books are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost them on my Facebook and Twitter, so you can find those. But those posts are not spoilers for this podcast, because those are just lists. And here, we have a little more review, a little more critique, and a little more discussion. But first, a little feedback. Sir Martin of Grey, left a comment on the last episode, "Top show. How the heck do you find the time to read so many comics? You have a job and a life." I know 1,000-page Archie Jumbo Digests aren't the densest of reads, but still. Of all the comics you mentioned, the stone-cold classic is the JLA debut of Felix Faust. The Demons 3 is penciled by Mike Sikowski remained far creepier than any modern redesign, and that Fantastic Fingers cover, homaging Sensation Comics number 109, is iconic to me. That was the first issue of JLA I ever read, passed down to me, by the way. I'm not that old, and I deny my comments are based on nostalgia goggles. Thank you, Sir Martin, and as long as my wife and employer don't ask those similarly tough questions about the number of comics I managed to read, I think I'm okay. And believe me, I pale in comparison to some of the folk I follow on Twitter in terms of what they managed to read. So, there. And, you know, in retrospect, Martin, I probably read that Felix Faust issue too quickly, knowing Faust and the Demons 3, but not really appreciating the historic nature of that specific book, so thank you for putting that in context. And we heard from half of the R&D Adventures team, Darren Sutherland, although if you base it on their combined height, Darren's closer to 60-65% of the team. Anyway, he says, "Hi, Professor Allen. I've been catching up on some recent episodes of the Comics Reading Journal that I've gotten behind on, and of course that's been a great pleasure." Good point, Darren. A lot of people agree that falling behind on my shows is indeed a great pleasure. Wait, is that what you said? Darren said he particularly enjoyed hearing me talk about the Edgar Rice Burroughs comics I've been reading of late. "You and I have talked about our shared enjoyment of his many creations before, and it was fun to hear your thoughts about so many issues over the last couple of episodes. I had a good laugh at your joke about John Sable being in your Tarzan comic, and want to sincerely thank you for passing those issues on to us." Yes, as soon as I saw that Mike Grail had done the art in that, I did check in with the Sutherlands to see if they had ever read this comic before, and when Darren said no, it immediately went on the comic book Circle of Life list for the dear Sutherlands. We plan to cover them in an upcoming episode of Warlord Worlds, hopefully coming sooner rather than later. "I've been reading the Mars books from Dynamite and have consistently enjoyed them. Recently, I've been reading through some of the various ERB titles from American mythology, including their continuation of The Land That Time Forgot and their Pellucidar series. Good stuff. I also remember buying Star Trek from Gold Key right off the spinner rack as a very little kid, and recently reread many of those issues when they were released in trades a few years ago. I really enjoyed the Indiana Jones series when it was originally released and still have those issues somewhere in my collection, and of course the Dark Horse comics based on Indy were also excellent. I'm not a big reader of comics about racing," Darren says, "but I did regularly read Speed Racer from Now Comics back in the 80s and 90s. Now was one of the great small indie publishers back then, along with Comico and Malibu. I'm glad you're enjoying the Arion comics. Our friend Lori Sutton was the editor, of that excellent series. She's a wonderful lady and friends with Mike Grell and Ron Randall. She currently writes Choose Your Own Adventure books based on DC and Scooby-Doo characters. And we've been lucky to meet her at Dragon Con a couple of times. Thanks always for the great show. Take care, Darren. And of course, Ruth and Darren personally know somebody connected to one of the issues I read. Of course they did. And thank you for those kind words, Duke Darren. That last episode also received social media love from Luke Giaconetti and Gene Hendricks, both from the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, Michael Carlisle, Clinton from Coffee and Comics, Trevor Owen Williams, author Scott M. West, Billy D., Mike from Comics in the Golden Age, Dead and Buried Dinosaur, Herman from Into the Weird, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, and Fan Film Friday. Thanks for all the supports, everybody. And now, on to the books I read last month, and as I do on this show, I'm categorizing those books. And first, are issues I read specifically for podcast appearances, the homework books. And for Quarter Bin 145, I read Secret City Saga number 0 and Bombast number 1 from the Kirby line of Topps Comics. And of course, on the national holiday, November 6th, Doomsday Point 2, I picked up the book I talked about on the second episode of Doomspeak, Dr. Doom number 2. And comics I read for listening to podcasts, and there are more of these than usual because a DC Universe app, and I love following along with comic book podcasts when I have the chance. And of course, the app gives me more opportunities to have that chance. And for listening along with episode 29 of Shag's Justice League International podcast, I read Justice League America 29 and Justice League Europe 5. And to listen along with Mike Peacock's podcast with new episodes of Justice's First Dawn, I read Justice League of America 87, which was a crazy story about robots and a mind-controlled Batman, and 90, and a pretty solid JLA-JSA crossover in 91 and 92, a story that also included Solomon Grundy, and JLA 94, all of which were read again via the DC Universe app. A quick shout out to JLA 94, which had, in addition to the JLA, main story, a full-length story. It also had two Golden Age reprint stories, one featuring the Wesley Dodds Sandman and one with Starman. And I guess you could call this a podcast follow-up, because the irredeemable Shag gave me the next comic as a follow-up to the controversial Quarter Bin 142, where I covered two Ghost Rider issues that I bought because they were reprinted in one issue for the controversial price of 50 controversial cents. And so to make good on all the grief he gave me over that one, Shag gave me the original Ghost Rider Rides Again number 2, reprinting Ghost Rider 70 and 71. Not bad stories, but it's hard to top the retelling of the Johnny Blaze origin story from issue 1. But thank you, Shag. And everybody, I think we all know deep down, he's not all that irredeemable. On to the new comics that we read right off the shelves. Justice League Dark, number 16. I am a story-first person, and usually that means that plot is most important to me, the specifics of what's happening in a story. But with Justice League Dark, what we get plot-wise is pretty similar story arc to story arc. There's a magical crisis or magic's in danger and the JLD has to join together in some configuration to stop it. The problem is that often nothing really happens issue to issue in terms of advancing the plot, and that is sort of the problem here. But I'm sticking with it, at least for now, because there are always moments of great character interactions. That's where Tynion is really getting it done as far as I'm concerned. In this issue 16, it's Constantine and Bobo worrying about Swampy, and also Wonder Woman and Circe, Zatanna. Those are moments that are keeping me interested in the title, at least at this point. And from the great folks at Alterna, provider of new newsprint comics at the awesome price of $1.50, I started a new four-issue mini with Gods and Gears number one. This takes place in the early days of auto racing, like 100 years ago. Hey, how about that? Another comic about auto racing. But a bizarre racing mishap sends our lead character and his kid sidekick, who was literally in the sidecar at the time. They go back in time even further to 1890 and also to an undiscovered civilization in South America. I say undiscovered because they end up going against one of my favorite all-time comic book tropes, super talking apes. Yes! I can only hope that the remaining three issues live up to that majestic comic book premise. Talking monkeys! And I read the next issue of a new series featuring one of my all-time favorite characters, Lady Mechanica Sangre. Number four, that is Sangre as in blood. As in Lady Mechanica getting in the middle of a battle between ancient vampires and almost as ancient vampire hunters. The lady is committed to protecting the child of a wealthy Spanish family. That's what she's been hired to do. But they are convinced that the vampire who turned him is a demon. And they want Lady M to keep him from entering the vampiric, as they see it, demonic life. But what can she do, caught between so many powerful forces? Well, I think we'll probably learn that in a couple months when the storyline wraps up with number five. I have thoroughly enjoyed this story, which does take Lady M in a different direction. So very much fun. And this is a new one, although I'm reading the series from Hoopla. It is a new ongoing title, and that's Dr. Mirage 3 and 4. We continue our mind-bending storytelling with Dr. Mirage and her young assistant lost in the other side. And this time, the other side is the Egyptian version of the afterlife. And Dr. M takes on a new foe, the embalmer, and the young assistant is in contact with Mirage's dead husband. But he seems to peace out whenever his advice would really come in handy for the fights. There are not a lot of titles on Hoopla that release on an issue-by-issue basis, pretty much at the same pace as the paper release. Most more follow the trade schedule. But it is a cool way to keep up with a new title. And there is only one issue left in this series, and I certainly look forward to seeing how it all wraps up. And on to the general comic reading that I did, and from the recent boxes of old comics sent in by Sir Rob Lance of the Comic Connection, Oakville, Ontario, was Superman Family 164, a 100-pager, hosted, if you will, by Mr. Action himself, Jimmy Olsen. There were two new stories starring him, and then reprints featuring Supergirl, Perry White, Krypto, and Lois Lane. The Krypto one really put the Dog of Steel in a bad light, turning him into a typical Hollywood movie star loser type. And the Lois Lane one actually featured Lana and Lori Lamaris, as it was an imaginary story about all the bad things that happen when Superman gets married, or as we say, the product of a comic book writer going through some personal issues in their own life, I imagine. And Lassie, 68. I actually didn't watch this show much back in the day, so I don't have that to compare it to, but the two stories in here were solid enough kids' adventure tales, with Lassie working with a forest ranger. They take down some fugitives in a ghost town in the cover story, and then there's a borderline espionage tale taking place in a forest surrounding a rocket testing facility. So good old Cold War spy stuff, and another interesting read. And from the aforementioned irredeemable shag, I read Free Comic Book Day 2008, Marvel Adventures, an all-ages affair that Shag spent a fortune on for me. Oh, no, wait, he got it free 11 years ago. Never mind, I kid, but that is actually my favorite kind of gift. And it's a pretty good and goofy story. Spidey and Iron Man and Hulk taking on and eventually taking down the Mandarin with the help of not just Ant-Man, but also a giant ant deep inside a temple in Machu Picchu. Yes, that is what I said, a giant ant. Fun read. Thank you, Mr. Shag. Our old buddy Luke Giaconetti sent me a care package of comics recently, including a recent printing of Classics Illustrated 28, The Last Days of Pompeii. Usually I read falling apart copies of this title from the 60s or so, but this one was reprinted in 2011 and was on good quality paper. Now here's the thing, the story itself, it wasn't all that great, but it is tough building dramatic tension in a family or in a society when it's all taking place in the shadow of what we know is going to be an upcoming disaster, which is what happens in the last few pages. So these stories are a few days away from not mattering at all. So I struggled to think they mattered when they were happening, when I knew that the disaster was coming. Luke also sent me a couple of issues of Executioner's Song, X-Force 16 and X-Men 15, because I think I have to admit this, you know, Luke and I just evidently are not as good friends as I thought that we were, if this is what he would do to me. No, actually, Luke said he wanted me to have a true 90s experience, which again, does not seem all that friendly. I mean, the issues actually, they were okay. I think it was still early enough in the series where Nathaniel Wayne was before Executioner Song eventually broke him and bringing 90s Comics Retrial, that podcast, to an early and swift demise. These two issues were certainly 90s-tastic, with characters always introducing their misspelled names in their own font. And I guess that was entertainment enough for me. Not great by any means, but I have certainly read worse. And the pack Luke sent still had a card in it featuring Jean Grey and Cyclops. So at least I can sell that and pay off my mortgage. So there is that. Thanks, buddy. Luke also sent Hardcore 6 and 12 from Valiant, because he is a Valiant fan. And of course, that's Corps, C-O-R-P-S, as in the Marine Corps. And HARD is an acronym for Harbinger Active Resistance Division. And I'll be honest, these were better than I thought. Maybe some of those things Luke says about Valiant, maybe he's not completely wrong. Actually, sticking with the Valiant theme, I read Psylords number 7, given to me by our buddy Carla Y. This wasn't the best of the Valiant lot, but it was fun in its own way. Sort of a futuristic sci-fi story, and of course, there's never anything wrong with that. Carla also sent Omega Men 21 from a series I never really got into when it was current, but I've read a few issues here and there, starting back, I think, actually in Quarterbin 100. And I definitely see the potential in the series, but I just haven't read enough of a solid run to say whether I like it or not. And stay tuned for a Valiant trade that I read, which will be discussed later in the episode. Now, Sir Iowa's Joe Crawford, he sent Justice 11 from Marvel's New Universe project from 87. Justice was the misfit of the line because he did seem to have supernatural powers and was not from the world outside your window. He's a little bit Punisher, a little bit Ghost Rider, and this is Jerry Conway and Keith Giffen, so there's definitely talent, you know, skill in delivering the issue. It's not a bad story, but it does not integrate well into the new U line because he's so different. And from Dr. Anthony, the engineer, an issue from something called Hound Comics from 2011, M3, number 1. This was the story of a lady-trained killer, and it bounces back and forth between her last case, which has caused her to be captured, and an episode where her and her parents flee from Central Europe after getting on the wrong side of some bad, bad dudes. It's a great start to an interesting title that actually ran 12 issues. And our good buddy Jeremiah Jones Goldstein sent some comics in recently, including Gru the Wanderer, number 62 from the Epic Comics line from 1990. I've read a couple dozen of these over the years, and I always enjoy them, and this one was no exception. In this case, the character who did the misunderstanding was Roberto the dog, who was jealous of Gru tending to a new horse. What Roberto did not know was that the plan was to fatten up the horse so he and Roberto could feast upon it. But things never go the way anybody ever plans in a Gru comic book. That just never happens. I should have mentioned this one before. I got this from the basement of dollar boxes at Pack Rat Comics. Another Classics Illustrated, the number 149, which was an adaptation of Off on a Comet by Jules Verne. And this is from the older run. This was one of the falling apart versions of this title. I haven't read the original book, but I've certainly read enough from that era that I do think this captured the sci-fi stories of that early era. And some kids' books that I read mostly from Sir Rob's care package and also some from Kirk Spencer, Jeremiah Jones Goldstein, that R&D podcasting couple, the Sutherlands. I read Betty 101, Tom and Jerry 259 and 267, Mighty Mouse number 1, that one's from Marvel Comics, The Adventures of Jerry Lewis 81 and 90, Archie and Friends Music Jam number 1, Richie Rich and Gloria 23, and Walt Disney Comics and Stories Volume 30 number 4. All right, it is time to take a break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about the graphic novels, trade paperbacks, long runs, and seasonal reading that I did during November.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
And we're back to talk about trades, long runs, and miniseries that I read last month. But we start with the seasonal reading. And around this time of year, that means some war-based comics in honor of Veterans Day, aka Remembrance Day or Armistice Day. Now, a lot of these books came from the generous Canadian Rob Lance, but other contributors to my participation in hashtag War Comics Month include the great Kanzen Gregorujo, Sir Iowa's Joe, Kirk Spencer, Pulp Reality, and World's Greatest Comics. And the war books I read were Weird War Tales 54 from 1977. This is a bit of a mishmash of this month, Veterans Day, and last month, Halloween. The better story in this one was about an American soldier in Germany in World War I who betrays his unit led by his brother, who he thought was making time with his wife, and he's killed. But then his ghost saves an American unit on the same location in World War II. The stories in this book, Weird War, tend to have like a Twilight Zone-ish sort of ending, with death always bringing balance to the particular situation. And Black Hawk 250. This is the war book I read most often when I was a kid. I didn't really get into the genre until probably 5 or 10 years ago, thanks largely in part to my social media and then eventual real life friendships with Luke Giaconetti and Kirk Spencer. In this one, the team faced down the War Wheel and King Shark. More importantly, this was the last issue of this version of the title, at least. It had ended in 1968, but then picked up for this brief 7-issue run in the mid-70s. And then from here, it lay dormant for another 7 years before finally ending at 273. And it was interesting reading that last page where they lamented this short 7-issue run and wondered if the character and the team and the comic would ever come back. Man of War 20 from 1979 has had a really good story starring Ulysses Hazard, a.k.a. Gravedigger, and a terrific story about the enemy ace. Nothing really more to say about these except really good. G.I. Combat 187 and 259. The first was an excellent haunted tank story and also had a really good sort of more general war type of story. Very solid. 259 was a 48-pager with not just one but two haunted tank stories, including a surprising one where the team found itself in the 4th century going up against Attila the Hun. That I was not expecting. There was also an OSS story that had a cool spy twist at the end. Sort of, again, a Twilight Zone-ish, justice is served kind of ending. Unknown Soldier 207, just a great idea for a war comic, although sometimes different writers took it in different directions. In this issue, the soldier takes down the Nazi assassin, the Black Knight, who Hitler had dispatched to take out the English king. Our Army at War, 216 and 296. That last one had a cool story about a new guy in the squad who definitely earned his battlefield promotion from Sergeant Rock. 216 was an extra-sized 80-page all-reprint issue with a range of stories, including the first ever haunted tank story. And of course, both of those had beautiful Joe Kubert covers. Great stuff. And speaking of Rock, I read Sergeant Rock 335 and Sergeant Rock Special number 2. Good stories, including one that featured Rock leading his men through the desert for water. Excellent. But that's special. Wow. That was terrific. It's an oversized book with a number of great stories featuring Rock and Easy at the Battle of the Bulge, as well as stories with the Haunted Tank, Mademoiselle Marie, and others. That one was terrific. Maybe the best of these war issues that I read, looking at it from start to finish. Now, I've talked up the DC Universe app a lot, and I really like a lot of selections on it, but to be honest, there aren't very many war comics there, to say the least. I did read one of the few selections there, a 6-issue mini written and drawn and colored by the great Joe Kubert, Sergeant Rock, The Prophecy, 1-6. Easy is caught between Nazis and Russians and has been given the strange mission of delivering one young man from a Jewish village to Lithuania. He is the prophecy. The notion being that once he tells the world about the horrors that he has seen, the world will rush to the Allies' aid and destroy Hitler. Along the way, Easy loses a member or two, finds a concentration camp, and, for the most part, saves the day. Very solid Rock story, but like I said, I do hope that DC adds to the war books in the near future in the same way that they recently bulked up the horror and monster offerings. Now, most of those were DC's, and I did read one from the other half of the big two, Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos 140, in which Fury has to deal with a general's son who is a little too gung-ho for war for Fury's taste, and he continually puts the Howlers' mission at risk, to say nothing of putting the Howlers themselves at grave peril. Everybody gets their comeuppance, and things work out well for our team. Now over to Atlas Comics, I read Savage Combat Tales featuring Sergeant Stryker's Death Squad 1 and 2. I've heard good things about this title, probably from Luke Giaconetti, who is a big fan of both war books and the Atlas line of comics. And it was good. The first two issues told the story of how this ragtag group of soldiers came together into a strong squadron of warriors. Nice backstory for Sergeant Stryker, as well as the team members, who all had shaky pasts, if also pretty shaky presents. Good stuff, and taking place in North Africa in 1944, it showed a theater of operations that doesn't get a lot of ink in war books, at least the ones that I've read. And then from Charlton, Fightin' Marines 160 and Fightin' Army 69, 102, 111, and 128. These were mostly pretty standard war stories. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing. Among the standouts was one from Fightin' Marines that told the story of one brave and bright American warrior taking on Hitler's number one killer in Nazi Hitman. There's a really good story in Fightin' Army 128 about a squad of four very different men, different geography, a background, races, as a tank squad learning to set aside their differences and work together in that confined space very, very well. In Combat 36 from Dell Comics from 72, this one was excellent, which I'm starting to expect from Dell Comics, actually. Listen to Quarterman 144 for more on that topic. This one tells the story of the Battle of Midway, soon to be a major motion picture. We focused in on one small group of characters, but also zoomed out often enough to get that big picture. There was a nice, skillful bit of storytelling, and the art, I'm sorry, there are no credits in these books whatsoever. The art on a couple of pages was terrific. Full splash pages of a plane or a ship. Really impressed with this one. And from Wildstorm, I read the start of a 6-issue series by Chuck Dixon and Butch Geiss, Storming Paradise number 1. Takes place in World War II, mostly in the Pacific, at least in this first issue. Very detailed work on the nitty-gritty of planning and pulling off military operations. We have surveillance planes, various types of ships, and a range of military folk involved. And it's written by Chuck Dixon, so you know you're going to get a very solidly written story. And that is, you know, so far at least, what I got with that issue. And the last one is a little shaky, I admit, in terms of fitting into this category. But with the title, I kind of had to read it this month. And that is The War Books 1 through 4. This is part of Marvel's New Universe line. And The War takes place after the events of The Pit and, I guess, The Draft. But it's really about 75% a war book and only 25% sort of superhero-ish. We have a lot of military units and strategies going on as the U.S., Russia, and Cuba almost all get involved in a nuclear war. There is a unit of superpowered beings, but they aren't godlike enough to take over the world with their powers. They operate within the chain of command, and their powers are used just as weapons would be and similar to how tanks and other munitions would be used. It's an interesting story, a reminder of life in the last days of the Cold War, especially the first three books. These are all 48-page square-bound affairs. And then in book four, we do get a bit of that godlike, superpowered being stuff settling the war. But while it was a war book, it was a pretty good war book. Now, before we move fully out of this topic, I do again want to give shout-outs to Luke Giaconetti and Kirk Spencer, both huge fans of war books and also proponents of the hashtag ReadWarComics and hashtag WarComicsMonth. Good work on that, fellas. And then on to the rest of the books I read. When the irredeemable Shay came to town last month, a handful of us got together, including Van Z, and he gave me a couple of trades, including Captain Universe, Universal Heroes from 2006. This was actually 5 one-shots where the Uni Power, aka the Enigma Force, hops from the Hulk to Daredevil to X-23 to Invisible Woman to the Silver Surfer. And this all actually tells a single story, bringing the Uniforce all the way back to Earth to give Gabriel Vargas the powers of Captain Universe. I don't know how long that lasted, or if that ended up being a thing for a while, or maybe not. But these were all good reads to varying levels, especially the one with X-23. I thought that one was quite enjoyable. So overall, for a trade I've never heard of, and no, maybe those low expectations helped, but I thought it was a pretty good read. Van also gave me Spider-Man's Tangled Web 7-11, a pretty strange collection of stories, actually. It's a pretty strange title, actually, made up of one-offs and arcs from rotating groups of creative teams, sort of like Legends of the Dark Knight, I suppose, over at DC. Anyway, here we get a 3-issue arc about a dying man trading the one valuable thing he has, knowledge of Spider-Man's identity. This one also has a one-off by Darwin Cook and Jay Bone, a goofy and cartoony story about Peter and the staff at the Bugle, and Valentine's Day. Not the best batch of Spidey stories I've ever read, but got the job done. The aforementioned Kirk Spencer sent me a trade paperback in his latest pack of comics, in this case the collection of Angela, Asgard's Assassin 1-6. Pretty good story of the 10th Realm's greatest warrior raised to hate Asgard and everything it stands for. But the truth of her life is that she is in fact an Asgardian, Thor's sister. So she finds herself on her own with no power to be loyal to and takes things into her own hands by stealing the newborn child of Freya and Odin. So we get to Asgard's version of heaven and hell, and to outer space with the Guardians of the Galaxy, but eventually she does have to battle the Asgardians. We do have battles in here and deceptions, crosses and double crosses, a solid story. Very glad I read it. The kind and generous Sutherlands, Duchess Ruth and Duke Darren, got a bunch of free books when they attended Baltimore Comic-Con and the related awards banquet. And being the kind and generous folks they are, they sent some of those out via the hashtag comic book circle of life. And among the things that ended up heading to me was a recent Valiant trade collecting Livewire 1-4. I hadn't read anything of the character before this, but the book does a great job talking about the character's past and the reasons why she is currently a fugitive. So it brings the reader right up to date while also telling a pretty fast-paced and enjoyable story about a character on the run. Are you listening, Luke Giaconetti? It's another Valiant book that I enjoyed. Now, I'm not sure where I got these last ones from. I'm leaning towards the 3-for-$1 sale at Comic Town, but I'm not certain. But those books are Metal Men 7 and 8, the last 2 issues of a 2006 series. This is one of the series in the Final Crisis era of DC. These are characters I like, especially when they harken back to those original Silver Age wacky stories. And this one has bits of that, but it definitely is a story that's more intense, more serious, and more mature, you know, at least in the comic book sense. But Will Magnus and the team were recognizable, and that worked for me. The overall story was a bit wacky, but I feel like it stuck the landing, and that matters a lot. And that care package sent in recently by Kirk Spencer also included Deborah Daring, 1 and 2. This was a Kickstarter book starring the Private Eye with Attitude. It's an interesting story, and the art and coloring actually stand out for me, which is rarely the case in a Kickstarter book. The lead character is good, a feisty lady military vet who is a paralegal by day and a PI by night. And the story works pretty well so far as well, where her current case may well intersect with her day job. Solid. Dr. Anthony, the engineer, sent The Girl in the Bay 1 and 2 a recent title from the Berger Books imprint over at Dark Horse. This is the line overseen by the former editor at Vertigo, Karen Berger, and I can see how she greenlit this title based on the writer, J.M. DeMatteis, and the pitch, which is this. A girl gets stoned in 1969, gets attacked and killed, and thrown off a bridge in Sheepshead Bay, and dies. Except that she climbs out of the bay alive in 2019, and making her way back to her family, her house, she finds herself 50 years older. And that's where it starts to get weird. So interesting story. I didn't totally need to find out what happens next, but again, it's certainly a good idea and a pretty solid comic. Dr. Anthony also sent the first arc of a 2013 series from Boom, written by a writer I really like, Mike Carey. This is Suicide Risk 1 through 4, again written by Carey, who is most famous for Lucifer, but to me he is the writer of the excellent Unwritten series, as well as prose novels featuring his character Felix Caster, freelance exorcist. In this story, superpowers are available for purchase, but doing so is really, really illegal. So a black market has sprung up, along with cartels and all the aspects of the drug trade and organized crime. After a San Diego police officer named Leo is involved in a terrible powered event that leaves a partner injured, he goes off book to take down the cartel. But to do that, he has to get some powers himself. And spoilers, things don't go as planned. And he quickly gets in over his head with the cartel and the power dealers and a few of the powered folk themselves. I like Carey's writing style, his sense of character and drama, and as soon as I read that, I knew I needed to go on to the next trade, and I did. I found that on Hoopla, and so read Suicide Risk 5 through 9 as well. Now, issue 5 was a standalone, which actually transitioned nicely leading into the next arc, where Leo goes undercover in a supervillain group that takes over a part of Mexico, and eventually it gets recognized as an independent nation. And then Leo brings it all to a violent and bloody end. But as much as he wants to return to his family at this point, he's changed. Looking forward to continuing this series, definitely, in the near future. I like the lead character, his situation, his family, his powers. It's a really good series. He also sent the start of a series from Oni Press, Morning in America 1 and 2. In this one, we have a group of mildly misfit high school girls who are investigating a rash of missing teenagers. The authorities ignore these, putting this off to runaways, but the girls are pretty sure they know better. And when one of them disappears, then they know they're correct. Good stuff in this one. Magdalene Visaggio writing a very interesting dark tale that I enjoyed quite a bit. And Dr. Anthony, totally getting it done, sent a digest-sized trade of a title from Action Lab, Jack Hammer, Political Science, 1 through 4. This is a private investigator story in a world with people with a range of powers and politicians talking about legislating that. Jack McGriskin, a.k.a. Jack Hammer, takes a missing persons case, but that quickly escalates, touching on all of those issues I mentioned. Some good characters, a solid mystery, and all in all, pretty good read. And then from a few sources, including Sir Rob Lance, I read a batch of stories from a Bronze Age title I've enjoyed dipping into every now and then, Marvel Team-Up, 49, 120, and Annual 7. These were Spidey team-ups with Iron Man, Dominic Fortune, and Alpha Flight. My favorite was the one with Dominic Fortune, a story about retirement and flourishing in old age, a topic that becomes more inspirational to me as each year goes by. And the annual was a good read as well, not because of Alpha Flight, sorry Shag, but because this was the era where Petey was dating Black Cat. And I thought that was a fun relationship, a fun era for the character. Now from the 3-for-1 sale at Comic Town, I picked up the first 2 issues of a series that I liked so much, I picked up more from Hoopla, so I ended up reading Red Sonja 0 and 1 through 12 from the Gail Simone run from Dynamite from 2013. Sonja is tracked down by a couple of fangirls / couriers who bring her back to King Dimoth, who she owes some favors to. And she ends up leading his plague-racked people against the invading Zamorons, who are led by an old buddy of Sonja, Dark Anicia, who seems to defeat Sonja, or at least make her submit, and sends her into exile. Just Sonja and her plague-riddled body. We get a lot of the dazed, feverish Sonja reminiscing about her childhood, her father, and then also her time with Anicia in the prison pits, where they became friends, became sisters. And the story takes some interesting twists and turns as far as that plot goes, before, of course, Sonja eventually has to throw down with her former bestie. Then she's given a quest to perform, and since it is in exchange for the release of 1,000 slaves, she agrees to it. And this sends her all over the world, and through many swamps, to collect the right entertainers for a king's big blowout party. And among all those quests and adventures, we actually learn a bit more about Sonja the Devil along the way. I'm not always an overwhelming, gushing fan of Gail Simone's writing, but this arc was very solid. And Jenny Frisson's covers are also excellent, as her comic book covers always are. And a book that I picked up one issue from the kind and lovely Sutherlands, who got it for free at Baltimore Comic Con, and then I went on Hoopla and got a few more. It's Archie, The Married Life, 10th Anniversary, 1 through 3. I read some of the Married Life stories in magazine form, the double stories of Archie marrying Betty in one reality and Veronica in another. And this series picks up, as the name implies, 10 years later, with both timelines, and also with the notion that Dilton Doiley knows something about the 2 divergent timelines, and that something dangerous is brewing. Good story, a fun read, and I wouldn't mind revisiting this series once that first trade is out. And from the public library, in order to get introduced to a TV series that's just started up on network TV, I read some more of Greg Rucka's P.I. series, Stumptown, Volume 2, 1 through 5. This time, Dex is brought in by a member of a rock band to find her baby, a.k.a. her guitar. And shortly thereafter, Dex learns that the DEA is also sniffing around the band and the guitar, with their eyes on possible drug smuggling. And shortly thereafter, the guitar magically appears on Dex's front porch, which confuses her to no end, and also sets the DEA's eyes firmly on her. As usual, Greg Rucka tells a tight, taut, action-packed story with well-drawn characters that you understand, even if you don't necessarily like them. The TV show has gone a different direction from these stories, but I like that, and it wouldn't surprise me, though, if a version of this story does eventually appear on the show. Speaking of TV, after watching the first season of this next show, now with this series, I've read all of Umbrella Academy, because this is Hotel Oblivion, 1 through 7, and it was strange. It is clearly my own biases and what I look for in comics, which is plot and story, over art and design elements, and this is not strong in the area of storyline and plot. Like, the first volume was much better in those areas, I thought. There is a reason that DC took a look at Gerard Way's work here in the first two volumes and figured he'd be a good match for Doom Patrol, the most consistently weird book in their line. Well, you know, broadly speaking, this is the Academy facing down an increasing number of increasingly crazily powered beings, and eventually they even have to battle themselves, or their versions from another timeline. But that's not all that happens, or maybe it's more correct to say that the fact that those things happen are all that the issues are about, because it's a lot more than that. Now, I enjoyed season one of the TV series, but I worry that they'll go out on the limb of non-narrative, less story-focused stories to model the nature of the comics, but we'll have to wait and see on that. And from Hoopla, I read more from a DC series that I've been working my way through. This time it's Batman 61 through 63 and 66 through 69. Those two that are missing in the middle are from some sort of crossover thing. The plot of these is simple. Batman has been captured because he is still off his game from the lack of a cat wedding. And he's being tortured and having nightmares, which is the name of this volume, although, of course, it's Nightmares with a K, because Batman. But what the issues are those nightmares. Some with Damien, some with the cat, and some with even stranger people. But we see how Bruce's subconscious is fighting the drugs in issues where John Constantine or The Question try to lend a hand. But my favorite one was issue 68, Bruce's nightmare version of the bachelor party and bachelorette party evenings. And even though this wasn't what happened, this was just his fever dream, literally, the notion of Lois Lane and Catwoman breaking into the Fortress of Solitude and getting wildly drunk in there, that was a fun read. And another Archie that I read from Hoopla, Pep Digital 115, Archie Falls for Fall. Lots of pumpkins, falling leaves, football season, and a range of other autumnal stories. I always like seeing stories together in a collection like this from various decades of Archie. I like some of the character designs more than others, but hopping from the 50s to the 70s to the 90s is one of the fun things with these Archie collections, be they a physical form or digital. And I think that's everything. In terms of my favorite reads of the month, that latest issue of Doctor Doom was very good. Of course it was. Dr. Mirage has been enjoyable. Suicide Risk and Stumptown were both very good comics. A lot of those war books were good. And that Sergeant Rock special in particular was very, very, very good. But in terms of what I thought was my favorite, the one I liked the most, was the penultimate issue of a storyline that actually had stuff happen in it and really makes me want to know how it's all going to end. And that book was Lady Mechanica Sangre number 4. Next month, I'm not really sure what I'm going to be reading other than some old Legion of Superheroes stories from Adventure Comics. Other than that, your guess is as good as mine. But whatever I do end up reading, I'll be here to talk about the books I read in December, and that episode ought to be out sometime right at the end of the year. Feel free to let me know what you think of this episode, what you think of any of these books that I mentioned, especially if you've read any of them. You can send that feedback via email at relativelygeeky@gmail.com or as a comment on the Facebook and blog post for the episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. You can follow the network on Twitter at relatively_geek. And of course, the network has its own page on Facebook as well. Come join us. All are welcome. Thanks for listening, and keep the pages turning.